Ecclesiastes chapter 11, Koheleth, also known as the preacher, a.k.a. King Solomon, has by chapter 11 nearly come to the end of his search, and he spent a great deal of money and expended a whole lot of energy and experiences a whole lot of discomfort along the way trying to figure out what is life really supposed to be about. Where is their meaning? Where is their purpose in life? And like every two-year-old I've ever met, he starts out by saying, hey, I can do it myself. I don't need your help. I got this. He didn't want to drag God into the picture, but he has eventually come to the point of realizing that everything he's trying to do on his own is vanity. It is empty. It is striving after wind. They are pointless endeavors apart from understanding how God works in the mix. Too much is out of Solomon's control, and he's the big king of the big nation of the day. Too often it seems chance and not having enough time interferes with his intentions, the best of intentions that he might have. He lives in a shifting universe out of sorts with itself because as he finally comes to recognize, sin has polluted our planet. Under the sun, work without God's intervention yields nothing of value or permanence. It's just a vapor. Just wind. And if it even seems to, there's no guarantee that anything that might come his way as a reward, an opportunity to enjoy the fruits of his labor, really are going to stick around. Yesterday I attended the funeral of a dear friend up in Kansas City. Tim was just 63. His life ended quite unexpectedly last Monday morning, and nobody saw it coming. He was busy doing life. And some of you have already been around me this morning, and you've already heard some Tim stories, and you may hear some more Tim stories before I'm done up here today because I'm still kind of processing all that has taken place. We were close friends and roommates for a time and co-workers and go back to dormitory days at the University of Missouri. And Tim, like myself, Tim was a big athlete. You can laugh. Everybody can laugh there. Yeah, Tim was a runner, a cross-country runner, a good cross-country runner. Along the pathway of his life, I watched him catch fire for God, and just his life was transformed. He had cancer and came out of that, married with kids, and then he tore his Achilles tendon, and his running days were pretty much over. But he went on to be the coach in a public high school and junior high, middle school in Liberty, Missouri, for 39 years. And so at this funeral with a couple thousand people in attendance, just kind of reflecting upon how God had suddenly intervened in our lives in a remarkable way, but for his glory. And so it was a powerful time. But life can be like that, can't it? We kind of move in a direction. He's 63 years old. He's already retired as a science teacher, but he's still coaching because he just can't not coach. And nobody would let him stop. And then he's gone. And King Solomon was busy reflecting upon how even sitting upon the throne of Israel, he couldn't make some things happen or some things not happen. And so we understand that life is filled with these kinds of stressful situations, that sometimes things just don't go the way we plan. Before I learned about Tim's death, I had a humorous story that I was going to share with you, and maybe you've heard this one before, but it's kind of a story of one of those days where everything goes bad. I'm going to go ahead and share it anyway. It's an old urban legend about a bricklayer. You with me yet? Who was injured on the job and had to submit his accident report to his company. Dear sir, I am writing in response to your request for additional information in block number 3 of the accident reporting form. I put poor planning as the cause of the accident. You asked for a further explanation, and I trust the following details will be sufficient. I am a bricklayer by trade. On the day of the accident, I was working alone on the roof of a new 6-story building. When I completed my work, I found I had some bricks left over, which when weighed later were found to weigh 280 pounds. Rather than carry the bricks down by hand, I decided to lower them in a barrel by using a pulley, which was attached to the side of the building at the 6th floor. Securing the rope at ground level, I went up to the roof, swung the barrel out, and loaded the bricks into it. Then I went down and untied the rope, holding it tightly to ensure a slow descent of the 240 pounds of bricks. You will note on the accident report that my weight is 135 pounds. Due to my surprise at being jerked off the ground so suddenly, I lost my presence of mind and forgot to let go of the rope. Needless to say, I proceeded at a rapid rate up the side of the building. In the vicinity of the 3rd floor, I met the barrel, which was now proceeding downward at an equally impressive speed. This explains the fractured skull, minor abrasions, and broken collarbone as listed in Section 3, Accident Reporting Form. Slowed only slightly, I continued my rapid ascent, not stopping until the fingers of my right hand were 2 knuckles deep into the pulley, which I mentioned in paragraph 2 of this correspondence. Fortunately, by this time, I had regained my presence of mind and was able to hold tightly to the rope in spite of the excruciating pain I was now beginning to experience. At approximately the same time, however, the barrel of bricks hit the ground, and the bottom fell out of the barrel. Now, devoid of the weight of the bricks, the barrel, which weighed approximately 50 pounds, I refer you again to my weight. As you might imagine, I began a rapid descent to the, down the side of the building. In the vicinity of the 3rd floor, I met the barrel coming up. This accounts for the 2 fractured ankles, broken tooth, and several lacerations on my leg and lower body. Here, by luck, my luck began to change slightly. The encounter with the barrel seemed to slow me enough to lessen my injuries when I fell into the pile of bricks, and fortunately, only 3 vertebrae were cracked. I am sorry to report, however, that as I lay there on the pile of bricks, I lost my composure once again and my presence of mind and let go of the rope. As I lay there watching, the empty barrel began its journey back down to me. So maybe you've had some rough days in your life, and maybe things haven't gone according to plan. Solomon is, he's still stacking Proverbs one on top of another in chapter 11 as he did in chapter 10, but they're not random, unrelated thoughts. They have to do with kind of drawing things from this crazy life where things are just not able to be foreseen, not able to be... You know, the best laid plans don't always work out. And the fact that the clock is ticking and sometimes we run out of time even before we think we shall. So he's building to the grand conclusion, and we'll see that one next week in chapter 12. But the first 6 verses provide us with at least 5 worthy lessons, life lessons. Certainly, we live in a world marked by uncertainty, but if that's the case, how shall we live wisely in light of that, that we live in this world that is marked by uncertainty? The first bit of wise instruction is in verse 1. Cast your bread on the water, on the surface of the waters, for you will find it after many days. Now, what does it mean to cast your bread on the waters? There's a song about that, and we have heard this verse all our lives maybe, and you hear people make reference to it. The literal take on it kind of leads to unsatisfactory results, doesn't it? I mean, if you cast your bread on the water, what are you going to get? Soggy bread, right? Yeah, that's not a good thing unless you're feeding ducks or fish or something. There are two interpretations that are generally brought to this passage. The first one, a view much favored by just about every televangelist you've ever heard, says it refers to the principle of faith giving. You cast your bread upon the water, which means you send $50 to Billy Bob Ministries. And as you cast your bread upon the water, then it's going to come back to you in multiplied ways. God will open the storehouses of heaven and dump them upon you if you faithfully cast your money upon the water of his ministry. There's a different view, and that sees it as a reference to ships laden with goods, to cast your bread upon the water. The bread in those days was the sort of thing that if you cast it on the water, it would float. It's kind of flat and not Wonder Bread with the balloons on the side. This is a different kind of bread, and maybe resemble a bunch of little ships heading out. And so when he talks about casting them upon the water, the word cast is maybe that kind of contributes to thinking about the giving. You throw it out there. It has to do with sending, with releasing, with loosing out onto the water. Solomon owned a fleet of commercial vessels. We know that because we read about it in 1 Kings chapter 10. And he would send out these vessels, probably filled with grain. So casting his bread upon the water might be a reference to that. And coming back filled with gold and silver and ivory and apes and peacocks. Not a very politically correct king, I would just add. But these are the things that had great value when you were the guy who had everything that money could buy. Either way, whether it's talking about gifts or whether it's talking about ships, and I favor the shipping idea, Solomon says the wise person will strategize when he's dealing with unknown outcomes. There's an element of faith that is pictured in this proverb, recognizing the need to step out and make your best effort, that a calculated risk is worth taking, that you cast your bread upon the waters, you send those ships out filled with the grain that you've gone to so much work to grow and to collect, to harvest and to pack and to put into these ships and send them off. And that's because there's a great return to be anticipated. Although the outcomes are never certain. I think in this particular proverb, there's a call to live boldly, to take risks, to determine that we're going to live in a way that maybe other people don't live, to be different, but not just to be weird, to be different for a particular purpose. And I would refer back to my buddy Tim, whose life was so different that people stopped in their tracks and just had to meet together and talk about it and what made his life so very different. Students filling the front rows in suits and running shoes, just unable to speak. I tried to have conversations with some of them, and we both cheered up and we couldn't talk. And what made the difference? Why was it that he could share the gospel in a public school and not get run out of town, although there were some people who tried a few years back? What was it about him? So he lived boldly. He was okay. If they wanted to fire him, he would go do something else somewhere else. But They would not allow that in Liberty, Missouri. So there's this element of faith that Solomon's saying, if you're going to make sense out of life, you're going to have to step out of your comfort zone. You're going to have to take these calculated risks, knowing that it's an uncertain world. You don't know. I mean, I bet Tim had a retirement plan. At 63, he probably hadn't tapped into it yet. And now he's not going to. His family will. But who knew? Well, God did. You ever do something for God that just moved you way out of your comfort zone? You just decided, okay, I'm going to do this thing, even though I don't really want to do this thing at all. You ever just maybe share the gospel with that person that you've thought, I know that person probably isn't a believer, and I know that I ought to share with them, but you haven't done it. And then one day you do, and you think, well, what if they ask me a question I can't answer? But you just decide to just open your mouth and say something, and then there's a return on that investment. You cast your bread upon the water. You send out your ship, and they don't all sink out in the ocean. Some of them come back laden with good stuff. That's where he's going with Proverb number one. The second piece of advice is in verse 2, amazingly enough. Divide your portion to 7 or even to 8, for you do not know what misfortune may occur on the earth. And otherwise, in other words, diversify the portfolio of your life. If you have ever talked to a financial advisor, one of the words that they love to use is diversification. Probably not a good idea to, you know, sell your house and take all of your money and buy Bitcoin. Maybe you'll be a billionaire next week, or maybe not. It's one of those things where you think, how does that even work? And so the challenge of it with people trying to invest in this this currency that's not really currency, that just kind of, whatever it is, a lot of uncertainty there. Could be worth, you know, had you bought $50 of it when they first started out, yeah, you'd probably be sitting on an island that you owned somewhere. But we didn't, did we? Because we're all here. So that's the way it goes. Life is full of uncertainty. So he says, diversify. This is Solomon's version of don't put all your eggs in one basket. Don't put your retirement fund into jeopardy. Don't buy one stock at the risk of that company going belly up and your life savings is gone. But maybe a mutual fund where you spread out the risk over a whole bunch of different companies. And if all those companies go belly up, probably your dollar wouldn't have been worth much anyway. And there's some wisdom in diversifying your funds. If you send out 7 or 8 ships, the likelihood of all 8 of them going down, going out in different directions, not so likely. You put everything you have on one ship and that ship goes down, then you're done. Jesus poured his life into 12 men. He had 3.5 years. He called 12 disciples together. One of them didn't do so well, but the other 11 changed the world. He spread out his influence into those men. Over the years, in my own life, I've sought to diversify my life in really 3 specific directions. One has to do with my position here and with my ministry here at Open Door and giving myself to the life and the ministry of this congregation, of individuals in this congregation, and looking for opportunities to disciple and to teach and to encourage. But that's just one thing. A second thing was I began early on to realize that I needed to to be involved in some kind of a, we didn't call it social justice back then. It was just a righteous need in our community. We had 4 abortion clinics within walking distance of this building, and I was challenged as I would drive by these places and occasionally see some folks out there praying or something, and thinking, what am I doing? Well, I'm not doing anything about this blight in our world. And out of that came Memphis Sidewalk Counseling and 25 years of a presence on the sidewalk and an investment in bringing life and hope to people who were caught in a very difficult situation in their lives. And then thirdly, couldn't get away from world missions. I tried to, I was telling our Sunday school class earlier that I tried to be a missionary because I didn't want to be a pastor. And God made me be a pastor anyway, but I'll show him. I'll stay involved in missions. And that's been in my heart for this whole time. And so I have diversified my life into these 3 areas so that I could seek some of what Solomon is talking about here with, send out 6 or 7 ships. Don't just send out 1. So boldly strategize and then venture out having accounted for the real risks that are out there and diversify to mitigate against the risks that are involved. Spread out a little bit. Don't just do 1 thing. Do numbers of things. The 3rd proverb of advice is in verses 3 and 4. If the clouds are full, they pour out rain upon the earth, and whether a tree falls toward the south or toward the north, wherever the tree falls, there it lies. You want to write that one down and have it needle pointed and put on your wall. Wherever a tree falls, that's where it lies. He who watches the wind will not sow, and he who looks at the clouds will not reap. What's he saying? Well, he's saying, redeem the time that you're given. Whatever you've been given, much of life is beyond control. That tree's going to fall, and it's going to fall wherever it falls. Don't let the possibility of the tree falling on your head keep you from ever walking around outside. Recognize that that's out of your control. You can't make it rain. You can't make it not rain when you want to. You don't decide which way the tree falls on its own. The farmer who doesn't sow because today's too windy and tomorrow's too wet and the clouds aren't looking good today will never harvest anything. There's always a reason why this is not the right time. This is not the right place. This is, one of these days when I get settled, I'm going to do this thing. When I get out of high school, when I get out of college, when I get settled, when I get married and have kids and kind of get a job and begin to get settled into life, then when I'm retired, I'll have more time. No, Solomon says, you seize the day. You take the moment. You do something of significance right now. Don't let the paralysis of analysis keep you from investing in significant ways in your life. There are times when you just need to take action. When you have to choose a path one way or the other. When you may not know which path to choose, but there are times where you just have to make a decision and go. Maybe you've held off on sharing a gospel message with somebody because you think, I don't know if they're ready for it. I don't know if I'm ready for it. I don't know if there's something else that I could do to be better prepared for what they're going to say back to me when I bring up the topic. Just get on with it. Find out what they're thinking. Find out what they believe in. Find out where their hope is. The 4th proverb is found in verse 5. Just as you do not know the path of the wind, and how bones are formed in the womb of the pregnant woman, so you do not know the activity of God who makes all things. Now, you want to explain to me how a little baby's body is formed inside a pregnant woman? You know, you can be a medical doctor, you can be a specialist, you can spend your whole life studying it, and you're going to have to say, I don't know. I talked to a surgeon one time, and he kind of stopped me somewhere along the way, and he said, well, Gary, he said, let me explain something to you. What I do as a surgeon is I bring bones close together or broken skin close together, and God makes it heal. And I don't know how that happens. I just know that if I bring it close together, God will make it heal. And I said, you call yourself a doctor and you're not arrogant? What's wrong with you? Trying to give doctors a good name or something. But that's the reality of it. There are things we just don't understand. And there are things we'll never understand this side of heaven. We don't much like being left out of a secret. You like being left out of a secret? You like being the last person to find out the big news, and everybody else knew this and I didn't know this? Well, there are some things God says, you know what, there are secret things that belong to the Lord our God. And you don't get to share. You don't get to hear. You don't get to know. That's why it's called the life of faith. The righteous man shall live by faith. If he told you everything, you wouldn't have any opportunity to exercise faith. And so you don't know how a baby is formed in its mother's womb. Oh, you might be able to talk about the stages of growth, and you might, you know, and sometimes in the sidewalk counseling ministry, I was busy trying to explain to people about when the heartbeat can be discerned and all of the different stages of life. And, well, you know, pull out the little wheel and figure out where your baby is in its development and the size of it and all these kinds of things. Have a little model that you could show them of this is how big your baby would be right now. But I don't know how that works. I don't know how God makes that happen. It is a mystery. It is a wonder. It is something that is beyond my capability. Some things God just doesn't tell us. We can't chart the wind with any real accuracy. You see a hurricane coming in the direction of Florida, and there are all these different projections of where it might go, and they keep changing the projections until it's the day of the hurricane and they've got the projection just right. We don't really know. It's helpful to have kind of close guesses, but we don't really know. Cause for wonder. What's his point? Trust God for the stuff you don't understand. Don't get frustrated because he won't tell you. He doesn't tell you some things on purpose. Don't demand to know what God chooses to keep his secret. What he chooses to conceal from you. There's a good reason why he chooses to conceal some things from you. There's a good reason why God just doesn't let you know what he's up to. If you have small children, do you tell them everything? No. Well, you don't tell them everything because they'll tell Martha back in the nursery and then, you know, the word might be out. Or they'll tell their cousin, and their cousin will tell it in children's church. But we won't go into that. You know who you are. It's his universe. He gets to do what he wants. He's God, and you're not. He gets the big office, okay? Get used to it. So when you come to something where it's frustrating because you really want to, why did God do this? Why did God allow my friend to die when he's 63 and we had so much of a ministry and so many lives, and he's got some middle school kids coming up, and they just were hanging on his every word and finally got into Coach Nixon's team and he's gone. Why would that happen? Well, we don't know. It's good reasons. We don't know. Boldly venture out, knowing that there are risks involved, that are unforeseen possibilities that exist that may wreck your particular venture. Spread out your investments so that when one of them crashes and burns, you're not out of business. And then get on with it. And don't allow yourself to be stuck forever in some can't decide kind of position. And then trust God for everything that's above your pay grade. You know, just, God, I'm not in charge of that. You are. I can't make this person come to faith. All I can do is tell them and show them and love them and show grace to them and pray for them. And that's what I'll do. And I'll trust you to do that part that isn't really in my job description. There's a fifth piece of advice, and that's in verses 7 and 8. The light is pleasant, and it is good for the eyes to see the sun. Indeed, if a man should live many years, let him rejoice in them all, and let him remember the days of darkness, for they will be many. Everything that has come will be futility. So he said there's a sweetness to life, even when it sometimes can seem just downright harsh. Some of you have been through some dark, difficult times in your life. In fact, if you've been around long at all, you probably have been through some dark, difficult times in your life. Enjoy whatever time God gives you on this earth, since there is a finite amount of it. Your life is given to you to be enjoyed, not just to be endured. That God says, I'll put you here. This planet is infected with sin, and that's going to make things difficult along the way. But we're called to enjoy life, not just to endure it until our number's up. And there are going to be some dark days in the midst of it. He doesn't pretend that, just smile, and the world will smile with you. No, they're probably laughing at you. Maybe you'll have a bunch of dark days. Let those trials make the good days sweeter. Psalm 118, verse 24. This is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. There are some days when you don't want somebody quoting that verse to you. You say, well, maybe yesterday was one of those days, and maybe tomorrow will be one of those days, but today is not a day when I can rejoice. Well, yeah. Yeah, so, Solomon is saying, enjoy the life that God's given, recognizing that there are going to be some hardships, there are going to be some difficulties. God has put you here that you might enjoy Him. That you might, as the Westminster Catechism says, love God and enjoy Him forever. It doesn't say love God and annoy Him forever. It says enjoy Him forever. So let's rejoice and be glad. The conclusion of this section is in verses 9 and 10. Rejoice, young man, during your childhood, and let your heart be pleasant during the days of young manhood, and follow the impulses of your heart and the desires of your eyes. Yet know that God will bring you to judgment for all these things. So remove grief and anger from your heart, and put away pain from your body, because childhood and the prime of life are fleeting. Wow. You know, I'm busy studying this passage, and then God says, let me show you what I mean, Starbuck. And I get the phone call about Tim Nixon. God's telling King Solomon to call upon the young man to rejoice. He's not saying rejoice because you're a young man and I'm not. He's saying rejoice while you're a young man. Rejoice in the Lord while you're a young man. Get your relationship with the Lord where it needs to be early on. and then live life to the fullest. See, I got to watch that. My buddy Ken and I were talking yesterday afternoon that this is what God allowed us to see in Tim's life. We were there. Most of the people who were talking about him yesterday didn't know him when we knew him. But we watched him find that balance in his life and get his footing and begin to live his life in such a significant way that a whole city's different. And that's an exciting thing. His advice to the young is to enjoy that season of life before the responsibilities of adulthood settle in and before the challenges of old age come. I think maybe when Solomon was writing, he might have been talking to 13 and 14-year-olds, but probably today he's talking to 28 and 30-year-olds. The call to follow the impulses of your heart and the desires of your eyes. That sounds like dangerous advice to give to a child. Yeah, I can't remember ever saying, hey, man, follow the impulses of your heart. Pastor Gary said I should follow the impulses of my heart and the desires of my eyes. Now, wow. I said, well, it's in the Bible. Yeah, but Solomon, it's kind of a mess himself. No, he's saying this for a grand purpose. While it may sound like the last thing you would tell a young person, understand what Solomon is really saying. He's saying, seize the day. Don't spend your days playing silly games and pretending that someday you'll get serious with God and someday you'll seek after God. Don't waste away these years because They're prime years for you to lay hold of God and to make those decisions that are going to determine much of the course of your life today, rather than waiting and then having to deal with all of the baggage and all of the difficulties that you've allowed to come into your life because you took a while getting there. Just in case he's not clear, he points out the balancing truth that, and know that God judges all things. So it's not as a matter of just follow your heart, do what you want. God will make it all be happy in the end. He'll put a smiley face over the mess that you've made. No, it's seek after the right things. And God will remind you along the way that that he has a standard of righteousness that he's holding us to. So get busy living your life for God right now. My friend Tim sorted out what would be the guiding principles of his life during his years at Mizzou. And then for 40 years, he lived out those principles. Not perfectly. You know, his pastor, who was also his assistant coach, who was also his close friend, said, not always. Sometimes he did crazy things. And I knew that was true. But he poured his life into his students, into his family, in a remarkable way. Got a lot of life packed into 63 years. So get busy living life right now. One day you might be checking your alarm clock, as Tim was doing on Monday morning, to make sure he didn't oversleep, which after all these years he's still doing, evidently. And he joked about it. And then he fell to the floor and died. Didn't see it coming. Nobody did. So what are the guiding principles in your life? Have you sorted those out yet? Well, get busy doing that because you say, well, it's a little late for me. No, it's not too late. You're still, got a pulse, not too late. Too young? No, not too young. Solomon says, don't wait around like some of these other people did. Get it figured out now. And build upon that for years to come. The table before us is an appropriate time for us to ponder all of these things. To settle on some choices. So you could talk to God as you're preparing for this table and say, I want to strategize about how to make my life really significant. Maybe it's already significant. Good for you. How can I make it more significant? What new thing might I add to the mix? How could I live boldly in the coming days? And then venture out, having accounted for the fact that there are real risks involved, and you're not just going to do one thing and do it with everything you got, but you've got a number of different things. So you're in school and you gotta study, but you gotta spend time with the Lord, and you gotta spend some time telling people about the Lord. You gotta do all of those things. You diversify so that you don't just do one thing at the loss of everything else. You mitigate against the risks of loss along the way. And then you keep pushing forward. You get on with life while it is day because you have a finite amount of time and you don't know how long it is. So don't always be sitting there going, well, yeah, maybe I should do, or maybe, you know, there comes a time when it's just time. There was a day in my life where I had to decide two decisions. Am I going to marry, well, I'm going to ask Peggy to marry me, and am I going to go to Dallas Seminary or not? Or at least am I going to apply and try to go? And I realized, I've been trying to decide on these things, and I've life is going by while I'm trying to decide. I got to make a decision here. And I made a decision. Some of you heard the story. I had went out to a lake, and I was going to walk around the lake and pray and talk to God. And about a half an hour into it, I knew that I was going to ask her and that I was going to apply. And I just kept walking around the lake, and it was a bigger lake than I knew. 8 hours of walking before I got back to my car. It was dark. And I was tired, but I was convinced. And it worked out okay. So, you know, times where you just got to make a choice. You can't cross a chasm in two short leaps. You got to decide. And then trust God for the stuff that you just don't understand. I don't know why God took that person out of my life. I don't know why God allowed that disease that crippled a friend. I don't know why God didn't make things happen the way I thought they were going to happen. But he's God and I'm not. And I'm going to hang my hat with him. And determine to live your life for God's glory. Because what else will have meaning 1,000 years from now? Enjoying the time he allows you on this earth, rejoicing in him, not sweating the small stuff, just getting on with things, doing what he's called you to do, intent on honoring him. Let's pray. Lord, we want to make our lives count for time and for eternity. We want to be challenged in tremendous ways. We don't want to live amongst the mooing herd, Father. We want to move out in the direction you've called us to move and to be the influence in this world that you've called us to be, and a reflection of your love and your grace. And Father, we would pray for the boldness to choose that, to to give up lesser things, to take the risks that aren't really risks at all, because at the heart of it, you were there just waiting for us to trust you as we're supposed to trust you. Father, we come to this table understanding that it's really not about us at all. It's about you. And we pray that we would honor you as we come to the table, and that we would examine our hearts, and that we would come before you with thanksgiving and with joy intent on enjoying the life that you set before us. I want to invite you to continue to pray and prepare your hearts as we prepare the table now.